Spirit Radio Podcasts.
So my next guest has been a foster carer for 20 years and she attributes her faith to playing a huge role in this. On the line just to tell us a little bit about her story and her experience, we have Terry Cullman-Black. Terry, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
No problem, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about what was the first thing that kind of made you want to become a foster carer in the first place?
Okay. Well, first of all, my motto in life has been and always will be, if God calls you to do something, he equips you to do it. And I've always held on to that. And it's the same when it came to fostering. It was actually friends of ours in our church who had always fostered. And I'd kind of seen that as a sort of first-hand thing. And they approached me and said, would you not consider this? And I kind of thought about it, prayed about it, and worked it through. And you know what? Went for it.
I love that idea, Terry, that if there's something that maybe initially we're asked to do or challenged to do, that kind of God gives us what we need to be able to do. Even though maybe your first reaction might have been, I don't know if I can do this and it might be too hard or am I in the right place? Yeah. You know, you have all these kind of, I guess, doubts. Did that happen to you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you can't imagine entering into something like that without having those doubts. And I suppose that really kicked in when we were just about to have our first placement. I remember lying in bed, panicking, literally panicking, thinking, am I going to be able to do this? But you know what? I kept going back. God calls you, he equips you. And he did in ways that just blew me away.
So what's involved then, Terry, in foster care? Can you remember the first child that you fostered?
Oh, I can indeed, yeah. They're all in my heart. We've had 35. I carry them all in my heart because God placed them in our home for us to look after them. So yeah, I mean, he was a little fella. We just fell in love with him immediately. What's involved is you obviously have to be screened. It's very important. Through TUSLA, who are the main statutory agency who do fostering in Ireland. So it's a long process. So if anybody's entering into it, it doesn't happen overnight, which is actually great because you have time to think about it, talk about it, you know, pray about it. And it doesn't happen overnight, but when it does happen, it's just amazing. It just blew us away. I mean, we just knew we were doing the right thing then. We knew, yes, God was equipping us.
35 children over the years that you fostered, Terry. And have you other children? And,
yes.
You know, throughout this time, and what ages were they when you started this process?
Okay. When we first started fostering, our eldest daughter, who's now 30, was 10. And we hadn't had her second daughter at that stage. And we always consulted our children in it, always. I mean, obviously, when the younger one was young, we couldn't. But it was a family decision, always a family decision. And we always felt if the girls, we had two girls, decided they did not want to do this any longer, because it is difficult, we're short-term carers. And if they felt they didn't want to do it any longer, that was okay by us, you know. But my youngest grew up with us. She doesn't know any different. And I think it's interesting if you look at sort of other families we know, our friends who are fostering, their kids are all grown up and fostering now as well.
So there's been a kind of a ripple effect of paying it forward in terms of helping these children. And so how does the process work? A child comes into your care. Do you know, Terry, how long they're going to be with you, or is it kind of different lengths of time for each child?
Yeah, okay. Well, you see, there's all different types of fostering, short-term, long-term, emergency, respite. We chose to be short-term foster carers, which means that the child can come into us any time and we will be open-ended for about 10 months. And in that time, we will just watching this little one grow and develop before they move on from us. I can't put that into words.
But that must be hard too, Terry, not only for you but for your other children, because presumably you bond with these children. They become a member of your family. They're one of your own. And you've done it 35 times. How do you do that side of the kind of the emotional connect, and then you have to break that?
Yeah, well, again, there's no way that my husband, myself or the girls could have ever done it without our faith. We couldn't. And I know that sounds a bit of a throwaway line, but you know, we know when they come, they're going. We have never got used to the day they leave, because if we did, we would not do that. We will all cry. We will all mourn the loss of the child. But in the big picture, we know that that's the job we were called to do. That's the piece in their life that God asked us to do. And we feel really strong that where they're moving to is the right decision. And it gives you enormous comfort. then no, you'd be surprised. But yes, we mourn them all. And as I said, I have them all in my heart.
Terry, these children that come into your home as members of your family, you're giving them love, care, stability. Have you been able to keep in touch with all 35 over the years and as to how they are and where they are and what they're doing now?
No. No, that's not part of the process. They could if they wanted to.
It's their choice if they want to kind of get back
into it. It's their choice. I mean, they've enough going on. Do you know, they don't necessarily need me, but I'm part of their story. So in their story, our family are part of it. So if they ever want to reconnect, that is not a problem. But if they don't, it's okay as well. It's their choice.
Yeah, and what's the kind of a day-to-day like, you know, being a foster parent for you and your children? Is it any different to the other children, your, you know, biological children that are with you?
Well, we always sort of had this rule that if somebody was about to have a birthday party or a play date or whatever, and we would often get them on short notice, that was going ahead, no matter what. That was absolutely going ahead, and they knew that. So it could have been a bit more chaotic because there could have been an added person into the mix. But you know what? It worked well. And, you know, there was challenges, of course. I mean, I'm not saying that it's all sunshine and roses, because it's not. There are challenges. But again, you know, you embrace it for what it is. You day-to-day, like, your own children, you have challenges with your own children as well. And you do day-to-day, whether it's a foster child or your own child, the same.
Yeah, you take every day as it comes. So who would you encourage then, Terry, to consider becoming a foster carer? You know, there might be people listening and that woman sounds amazing. I'm nothing like her. Who's it for?
Well, I'm telling anybody listening out there, you can be a foster carer if it's for you. So you just have to pick up the phone. You have to connect. And I know you're going to give out all the information afterwards. There is an information evening coming up on the 14th and 15th. It'll be an Eventbrite free ticket event. Anybody can go forward, anybody, but listen to your heart, listen to what God's telling you, and pick up that phone. There are 200 children who need care every day in Ireland. That's massive. No, they can't get foster carers, especially for like the 10-year-olds, people taking siblings. I mean, there are so many options. As I said, long-term, short-term, like us, there's respite, there's everything. Think about it, pray about it. But pick up, go to the information even, log on, ask the questions, pray about it.
It won't do any harm to just kind of find out more information, see if it's for you.
Absolutely.
And as you say, 200 children every day, they need a family, they need love, they need stability. And the impact that can have is life-changing, I would imagine, in many cases.
Oh, yeah. And it's staggering to think that in such a small country, we have that many children who need help. So I would encourage, I'm not saying, as I said, it's a better, it's not. But you know what? When it's amazing and it's challenging, just the support you get as well. And I have to say that. I always say that because people are not sure, do we get supported? I have had the most amazing support for every placement I've had from those social workers. We work as a team the minute the child comes in. We work as a team. That's the way it has to be.
Yeah, you're not left on your own. Well, Terry, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your experience with us today. That's Terry Coleman-Black, just sharing her experience of being a foster carer. Her family's cared for over 35 children over the years. And as Terry mentioned, there's an upcoming information event where you can find out more. And it's a TUSLA event. And if you want to find out more, you can email tusla.fostering@tusla.ie. And or you can look up the upcoming fostering information evening, which is on the 14th and 15th of April. And details are on Eventbrite. Spirit. I think perhaps lockdowns have had a positive impact on maybe helping you become more green-fingered, and whether it's, you know, planting stuff on your balcony or if you have a bigger garden, lots of us have been spending a little bit more time out and appreciating our garlands. And, you know, one of the things that Ireland is known for is our beauty and our greenery. And we actually have one of the world's best gardens in Powers Court Gardens in County Wicklow. It's actually been voted number 3 in the world of the top 10 gardens by the National Geographic. How cool is that? And it's right on our doorstep. But what's it like to be managing one of the world's best gardens in the world during a pandemic? And April is actually World Garden Month. And to mark this, we're going to be chatting now to Alex Slazenger, who's head gardener of Powers Court Estate and Gardens in County Wicklow. Alex, morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Welcome
from a sunny Powys Court.
Yes, a lovely day for you and people, I'm sure, envying your job, you know, in the outdoors and in such a beautiful garden if people have been there. But I know lots of families and young people will have done some more home gardening projects during lockdown. But what's it been like for you? Were you always green-fingered growing up, Alex? Or did
I was indeed, absolutely, yeah. I always wanted to be outdoors. That was my... Growing up, obviously, it was a bit of a bonus having Powys Court as my playground. So I just always wanted to be outdoor. I always wanted to be doing something with my hands. And I just, from a young age, I had a passion for plants. It was actually, my mother caught me chopping daffodil heads off some of her daffodils and chased me around the garden. And from that moment on, I decided I was going to create rather than destroy plants. So I've been in this role now for about 6 years. So I'm the head gardener here at Powys Court Estate. And it's just a magnificent place to work. It really doesn't get old.
How did you go from that, Alex, to obviously being a child who had one of the most impressive back gardens, if you want to call it that way, like growing up on the estate? But how did you go from that to then actually becoming a gardener? Did you have to study for a long time, or what was your journey?
Yeah. So I got sort of, as soon as I left school, I travelled around New Zealand. And New Zealand is quite a similar country, sort of landscape-wise and plants-wise, to Ireland. And I kind of just fell in love with nature when I was over there. And I came back, started working as a gardener around Enniskerry, and then decided I was going to go and do my training out in the National Botanical Gardens out in Glasnevin. So I did my studies out there and came back and applied for the role as head gardener at Powys Court, and very luckily got it.
And what's it been like? What's it been like just doing your job, Alex, during this pandemic? Because naturally, in normal times, Powys Court Gardens would be lots of life for people and visitors, and it's probably been a different and strange year for you.
So yeah, it's been a really weird year. We our business here is really an international one. So we really rely on tourism, which obviously has just fallen off the planet. But one of the nice things is we're reconnecting with the Irish people here. And, you know, Irish people are now, we're starting to get out. We're starting to visit places on our doorstep that we haven't been before. Our annual membership has boomed since the whole restrictions.
I think that's because people are kind of appreciating the outdoors more.
Absolutely. You know, they want to get out. We've got, not only with the gardens here, we've got an amazing river walk along the River Dargle, and that is just one of the funnest places to go. You can go down with your bikes, you can bring your dogs, and you've got an amazing kind of collection of large specimen trees from all around the world. So along with that, the waterfall, which is just incredible, the gardens here, it's just a really, really good package.
I'll have to share, Alex, one of my fond memories now, because last summer I had a date morning with my husband. No kids, grandparents had them. It was when you were fully opened up and we were walking hand in hand around the gardens, and it was absolutely, I definitely recommend it as a date morning idea. What about just this time of year, and April is World Garden Month. What's growing in the gardens at the moment?
So this is really, really busy for us. We're absolutely all hands to the deck. And what where I am at the moment, because I'm out in the gardens, I'm in the herbaceous border. So we've got the longest double herbaceous border in the country. It's 122 metres long, double-sided. So it's a huge task. But last autumn, we planted in about 19,000 tulips. Into this area. So
how long does that take then, Alex?
It took a long time. We had to dig 550 holes and plant in tulips into the holes. So we're planting them en masse as a massive big display. So I've got about my pick this year was really delicate colours. So nothing too striking. They're sort of pastel light colours. And that to kind of go with the mood that everybody's sort of easing back in. You know, everyone's still a little bit tense, so the colours are just to kind of relax you. And I'm just looking at it now. This is something to see. It's really just coming into its prime now. We're probably, this weekend coming now, will be its best. So if you do like tulips, if you're a big fan of tulips, this is the place to come.
And can people visit the gardens at the moment, Alex?
They can, yes. We're open. So obviously we have all our... 2 meters in, and hand sanitizer and face mask. But we're open. The thing about this garden is it's huge. We're 47 acres of gardens in here. We're about 1,000 acres on the estate. And you can just, like you said, you can have a nice tranquil walk and you can just get lost in the place. There's always a little corner where there's a bench where you can sit down and just immerse yourself in nature. So it's, it's good for the soul. It's very good for the soul.
Yeah, and I have to say that's even looking at my little modest garden. There's a few tulips, not 50,000, mind you, Alex, but it does, seeing the beautiful plants at this time of year does lift the soul. What about what would be your advice to people who are saying, okay, we've got to pick the brains now of this talented gardener. What should people be planting themselves at home? What's kind of easy to plant and look after at this time of year?
So, yeah, what's really easy to do now is, it's coming into sort of summer bedding. That's what's going to be coming on the shelves soon. That's your sort of your annual plants that you can put in pots if you don't have a very large back garden. What I'd really promote as well is wildflowers. So we're doing a big push here on annual wildflowers, and we're developing some of the areas in the garden to sow in annual wildflowers, and that's going to attract bees and wildlife. And also what's great is it lowers the maintenance of an area. So we're looking at kind of sustainability as well. So if you've got a back garden and you're sick of mowing your lawn and doing all that, why not just go for a patch with wildflowers, and you don't have to maintain it and you get all the beauty as well. Very low maintenance. I think one of the key things with gardening, I always try to tell this to people, is don't make it harder than it should be. You know, gardening should be a relaxing pastime and a therapy. So, you know, don't plant things that are going to take a lot of time and effort. Plant something simple that you can enjoy. And that's the kind of key to gardening, because it is hard work.
Yeah, and if you don't enjoy it, well, then you need to go back to the drawing board, maybe. I love planting simple bulbs and things with kids, and the wildflowers are really easy for the kids to do. Great suggestion. Finally, just to ask you, Alex, of course, perhaps at the moment people will be visiting the gardens, you know, if they're within 20K or they live in County Wicklow, but please God, look, things will open up towards summer. Yeah. What can people expect at Powers Court this summer?
Okay, so Brian, so right now I'm going to quickly run you through what we have in bloom right now. Obviously, the tulips. We've got a rhododendron walk. I'm a big fan of rhododendrons. Rhododendrons are kind of Asian Himalayan plant, and they were brought here about 150 years ago, and they're just spectacular. So we've got the whole rhododendron walk is nearly out in full bloom. We've got cherry blossom in the Japanese garden. We've got magnolias. We've got camellias out. We've got daffodils everywhere. And as we run into the summer then, we have a massive amount of roses. So we've just been feeding our roses. One really important task this time of the year is to feed your plants. So get to your garden centre and pick up a fertiliser for plants, and that gives them a kind of boost, because although it's been very cold recently, soil temperatures are actually high for this time of the year. So, you know, the plants are actively taking up nutrients. They really want to take up as much nutrients as they can. So by fertilizing, you're giving the plants everything they need.
That's really great advice, Alex. Mm. And thanks a million for chatting to us today. I know a lot of people will be very envious of you out in the sun gardening away today in Powers Court.
Absolutely.
And please God, many of those listening will be able to visit Powers Court sometime soon.
Oh, it's a spiritual haven, I think, this place is. And you can just disconnect. Actually, that's my thing when I say it's soulful romance as soon as you come in the gates. And just switch off, disconnect whatever's happening in your life at the time, if it's complicated, and just for an hour or two, just reconnect back to nature and enjoy yourself.
I love that. Soulful romance. That's a great way of putting it. I would certainly agree, having been blessed to have been there within the last year. That was Alex Slazenger, the head gardener of Powers Court Estate and Gardens in County Wicklow. And if you want to check them out, you can go to powerscourt.com. Spirit. You might have heard the story and, like so many others, been shocked and saddened over the weekend with the passing of Big Brother celebrity star Nikki Graham, as she lost her life to a long battle with an eating disorder. Now, what's tragic is her mum had spoken out that it was gym closures during the pandemic that took a huge toll on Nikki, just in terms of her recovery, because she relied on fitness to help her combat her eating disorder. On the line to talk to us more and just to chat to us about the importance of fitness for our mental health Perth. We have Stephen Kinsella, owner and head coach at FSM in Bray. Stephen, morning to you.
Morning, Wendy. How are you?
Tell us a little bit more about this story of Nikki Graham, about who she was and just about the connection between her story and fitness and her mental health.
Well, based on what I read and what I read a bit from her mum, is Nikki did suffer from anorexia nervosa for many years on and off, which is not really on and off. Is she had good times and bad times, but it was a condition that affected her both physically and mentally. And she used the gym to help her eat, according to her mother. So the way it would work is for her, because when you have anorexia, one of the things you find really hard to do is to consume food. So she used exercise as the catalyst to help her eat. Again, this is according to her mother. So when gyms were closed, she couldn't exercise the way she would normally exercise. And against more gym rather than being outside for exercise. And she believes that that's what was affecting her and forced her to retreat back into herself. And when you start coming under from anything that I've read or studied on anorexia over the years, is that when you kind of get into a cycle of it, you tend to pull away from all family and friends. And in the article, her parents do say that she did start pulling away in the last couple of weeks after gyms were closed. So there was a bit of a trigger there, possibly. I'm sure there was multiple angles about it, but it's according to her mother, it was helping to keep her alive. So
I think, Stephen, what a lot of people will identify with is that for a lot of people, exercise, their gym class, what their swimming, whatever it is, things that we haven't been able to do, is good for their bodies, good for their minds, good for their souls, but it can be a coping mechanism as well, a way to deal with stress, a way to, you know, switch off. For some people, that is their only way to switch off. So how do you manage that? I know we can still exercise outdoors, but for a lot of people, it's something else. It is the gym or a swimming pool. It's the community. It's the atmosphere. You know, it's working with others. So what do you do when that's taken away?
Well, that's the big thing with lockdown. A lot of people, yes, you can exercise, but even going from obviously the likes of Nikki and even our own members here at FSM, and I'm sure across, is a lot of people like to do exercise in a very specific way, and running and walking might not be the thing that they enjoy at all. And if anything, it's something that it stresses them out to want to go running or to want to do hikes and all of that. So it is, like you said, it's like everyone has their outlet, and it is an hour or an hour and a half or however long you're using, it is like it does help kind of for a lot of parents. It's time away from the family. It's good headspace. It's a time to socialize and interact with adults again. And it's a time to just to switch off and be in the moment of exercising as well, which is really, really good just to kind of decompress when you have a really, really stressful lifestyle.
And how have you been advising people, Stephen, like your members that haven't been able to go to the gym to try and kind of combat the fact that they can't go to their classes or to stay in their usual routine?
Well, so what we've been doing, like obviously online, but there's a lot of people that we've been working with that don't want to do online and aren't into running. And it's pretty much to the point where it's kind of for your own sake, you need to do something. And what we keep saying is something is better than nothing. So whether it's 10 minutes of stretching or it's a 10-minute workout at home, or even if you don't like to run, but you went and ran for 10 to 20 minutes, it's the benefit after the fact is what's helping people, because the motivation factor to do something you don't really want to do isn't there. So we kind of look at it as like, go win the day, do something, and feel better after you've done it. But it's just getting them to do that. And that's what we've been kind of promoting to a lot of our members and myself as well, getting up and trying to stay motivated to exercise. That's been hard over the last, especially the last 2 months of lockdown.
Yeah, the motivation piece is hard, but what about just the, as you're saying, the after effects, you know, the endorphins and the kind of evidence that we have that says, you know what, the endorphins that we get from exercising is really important for our mental health.
Well, yeah, I know yourself. You're one for exercising too. Is that when you, even if you don't feel like exercising, when you finish it, the feeling you have afterwards, you're elated. Your body is performing at a higher rate. You've firstly the benefits. You're stronger. You're fitter. You're healthier. Your immune system is better. But then the hormone release that you get makes you feel better about yourself. So mentally, it will make you stronger. And it has been said for anyone with mental health issues that exercise can be a component to help them overcome it.
Yeah, and it's usually given as a suite of measures. Now, eat well, exercise well, and even just, well, the positive, obviously, of, you know, gyms being closed, I guess, as people are forced outdoors, but being outside is good for us. And I know you, over the years in our chats, even, you've forced yourself to do things like hop in the sea, even though it mightn't be your first, you know, your first choice, but just the benefit of fresh air and how good that can be for us as well. Do we underestimate that?
Oh, big time, getting outside and getting into nature, I think, is huge, and we don't do it enough. And it's even to walk through a forest on your own is, like, just for a headspace is amazing, even if it's just a 20-minute walk or a hike, or even like in Bray or Brayhead, or you go to Glen of the Downs or something. It's good to be in nature because it does. There is a connection between the human body and nature, and it makes us feel better about ourselves.
What would you say then to people who are saying, okay, great, I can go further on my 5K, I can go 20K now, we're within the county. So should we be kind of mixing things up or challenging ourselves, I don't know, with longer distance and the brighter evenings? What are you telling people to do, Stephen?
Well, I think with the brighter, like you said, like with the brighter evenings and the fact that you can travel more, pick a destination. Like if Glendalough's in your way, is in your 20K, or the Dublin Mountains are in your 20K, go and pick a trail and go out with some friends, well, and one other household, and go and enjoy it, and bring like make a kind of a 2-3 hour thing where you bring some food, you just go about it, you get the trail done, and you just enjoy your time in nature, enjoy your time with another person.
And what about encouraging kids? I've been fascinated with I have two boys. One is 4 and one's coming up to 2. But it's amazing. The 2-year-old just watching his older brother, and we would go on hikes every weekend. We'll walk for an hour or two, no problem. How do we encourage kids who might be finding it hard with, you know, sport hasn't yet resumed for them and things that they would be used to doing that would be getting them out and moving, and they still need to get their exercise? How do we encourage them?
I think it's a bit of monkey see, monkey do. If it's part of the family unit, like if the parents aren't doing it, then it's hard for the kids to do it. And even if the kids don't, like my 5-year-old didn't want to go for a walk the other day and he gave out about it. But when we got to where we were going, all he did was run around and throw sticks and splash in the water. So it's kind of, you're the parent, let's make sure your kids are getting their activity. But it's also, if you're seen to enjoy it, children will then associate it with an enjoyment. And remember, like, your kids look up to you. You're their role model. So it's a big thing of monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah, it has a huge impact. Well, Stephen, have you got anything coming up? Obviously, everything is virtual, that people can kind of connect up with you and your gym?
Yeah, well, we have our normal stuff. But this weekend, we're actually running pregnancy. Our coach, Erin Tobin, is running a pregnancy workshop for anyone that is obviously currently pregnant or is planning on becoming pregnant, on how to exercise during pregnancy to keep your body strong and to make sure you're doing the right type of exercise during your pregnancy and the trimester.
Okay, how do people connect up with that then?
They can just go onto our Facebook page or contact FSM at info@fsmbray.ie, and we can direct them towards the link.
Great stuff, Stephen. Thanks for joining us on the programme today. That's Stephen Kinsler, owner and head coach at FSM Bray. And you can get all the details of their socials on fsmbray.ie. And it stands for Functional Strength Movement. If you're impacted by any of the topics that we were talking about, the number for the Samaritans, which is free to call, is 116 123. And if you're struggling with an eating disorder, the website that might provide you with some good support is bodywise.ie. And their helpline is 01 2107 906.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.